Okay. So glad you're all here. As always, I'll start us off with a prayer. I want to thank you, Father, for bringing us here tonight. Thank you for giving us the courage to continue in this process, this difficult process of learning more about ourselves, learning truth. I ask that you open our hearts and open our minds tonight so that we may hear something that we need to. That we may be inspired to continue this difficult course of action, especially at the point we're at. And thank you again for your grace and your power in our life. And we just ask that you allow us to set aside everything we think that we know so that we can have an open mind and new experience. Please just help us to see the truth about what's blocking us from going out from here and doing your bidding. Being of maximum service to you and our fellows. Amen. Okay, congratulations. You guys made the cut. If you haven't noticed, the workshop rapidly shrinking. Difficult portion of the work, going from the inventory to the fifth step to the six and seven. And tonight we're going to talk about eight and nine, making an amends. Making restitution. We admitted all our fault on paper, and now we're about to embark on this journey and go and talk to those that we have harmed and admit the fault and the harm that we've done, and also ask what we can do to make it right and open ourselves up for them to enlighten us on our actions and our behaviors and how we harm them. So you can understand why it's difficult and scary. And the same way you've watched this workshop go from 30 people down to like eight or nine people, it's typical of step work. And after a fourth step, if they're lucky, they actually do a real fifth step. And then it just kind of falls off from there. And then people wonder why they wake up miserable. With a few years of sobriety, or they end up drinking again. I believe that just as it told us in our fifth step that if we skip this vital step, we may never overcome drinking. I believe that's true for the amends process as well. We asked ourselves three questions in the beginning, in the forewords that we were supposed to. It told us to carry it through the first three steps. Did I feel like that? Did I think like that? And do I believe that this program can work for me? I believe we should carry those three questions all the way through this work. Another thing we did was on page 58, where we signed our name and we said that we have decided that we want what these people have. And we are willing to go to any length to get it. So those are questions to ask yourself if you end up balking at the amends or if you feel that they're not really necessary. I'm not going to say that they aren't difficult because they are. This is a vigorous course of action that we're taking that requires some strenuous effort. And we were reminded back on page 64 that if we don't utilize strenuous effort and make this a vigorous course of action, all of this is going to have little or no permanent effect. So I would ask you to really contemplate that and ask yourself the question, do I believe that? So we talked about step six and seven last week. I hope that each and every one of you had the opportunity to do a fifth step, had an opportunity to take some time and do a step six and seven, and that now we're ready and willing to launch into the amends process. I would like to reiterate that from step six on, it's on you guys. You're going to get out of this what you put into it. Nobody's going to hold you accountable. Nobody's going to force you. And faking is really not an option. So ultimately, it's up to you. I do believe you will get out of this what you put into it. So we said our seven-step prayer, and at the end of it, it says, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. So what does that mean? Surely on a daily basis, talking to God and asking him to grant us strength to go out from our homes and do his bidding, carry the vision of his will into all of our activities. But from a perspective of the steps, going out from here to do his bidding is to go make the amends process. So being willing to have God remove our defects of character, letting God know that we are willing for him to have all of us, the good and the bad, and take away from us every single defect of character that's standing in the way of my usefulness to God and to my fellows. Tonight we'll talk about what our real purpose is. So we're going out from here to do God's bidding. What does that look like? Well, it says now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Now we hear faith without works is dead a lot in the program, and most people relate it to taking others through the steps, which is totally true, and that is what it talks about in Bill's story and at the end of step 11. But right here it's talking about the amends process. See, this faith that we've gained, these results that we've seen of sobriety and a little bit of peace and serenity without further work, just like it told us in our third step, there'll be little or no permanent effect. Another way to say that is your faith may be dead. It might die, right? I believe this is the hardest thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe it's harder than a fourth step. It's harder than a fifth step. It's harder than all the struggles that people talk about with God. I think we kind of create those barriers. There's some genuine fear in going out to people and looking them in the face, talking to them about our journey and our desire for a new relationship with God and how clearing the air with them and recognizing how we've harmed them is a big part of that. Very scary. Very scary. Will not deny that. Also very rewarding, comforting. And I think look, when you're looking for results in this program, aside from a period of time not drinking or using, which is a miracle in itself, these particular steps will give you the ultimate satisfaction. The ultimate recognition of the true presence of God happening right in front of you. I also believe that, and again, these are just my beliefs, my perception. This is where the rubber really meets the road, and this is what really qualifies me to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to say that I've gone through the work. So we're going to look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons that we've harmed to whom we're willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. So we look at our inventory sheets. Most of our amends lists are going to come from there. There will be some amends that are required that aren't on your resentment inventory. How do I know if I need to make an amends? If there's a little voice, if there's a little weight on your conscience or your heart, then you probably should. It's kind of a good way to decide if it's warranted. So we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. That's our inventory. Now we're going to go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. So remember, as we're going out to do this amends process, that those are the things we're going to focus on. How we've been living on self-will, and how we've been trying to run this life ourselves and wrestle satisfaction out of each and every person we've come in contact with through that idea and those principles, we've caused harm. If we haven't the willing to do this, then we ask until it comes. Now, if you're genuinely willing to take this action and you cannot find the power to go out and do it, pray about it. Ask God to help you with the willingness to go out and make these amends. Remember that it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. That was back on page 58, what I read earlier to you guys, where we signed our little contract. And we stated that I've decided I want what they have and I'm willing to go to any length to get it. Probably there still are some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. So it says here for us to go through the entire list, pausing in prayer at each name, asking, am I willing to do whatever each person or institution asks to right this wrong? We're going to mark it with a plus or a minus on each. I get the power to do the ones that I'm not willing to do from doing the ones I'm willing to do. So we start there. Page 81 of our Big Book Awakening workbook has some directions on making the cards. You guys can refer to that. We'll help you with the ones you're willing with and unwilling with not to do. Do the ones you're willing with first. So let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. So use your discretion. Excuse me. If you know that coming at a particular individual and opening up with, I found God, I'm sober, I'm working a program, may not be the proper way to approach it, then don't. What we want to do here is we want to open our minds. We want to open our hearts. But we want the words to come from the heart. So use discretion. We might prejudice them. And at the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. What does that mean? We might prejudice them. So if we enter this engagement talking about this aha moment, we may turn them off. So again, instead of discretion, use discernment. Look up the word discernment. It's a great word. That's what we want to use here. So at the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. So here's our purpose. We always wonder, what's our purpose in life? And if you want to take this program and these steps to heart, please contemplate how important this statement is. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That is our purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is our purpose as recovered alcoholics and addicts. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. This amends process, the inventory, the fifth step, the six and seven, coming to believe that God can restore us to sanity, get us past whatever we're going through, and take us to this better place. That is all part of us fitting ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. If we do not go out and do the amends process, we cannot fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It's seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. So again, we're going to use discernment. Now we're going to approach this. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with the sincere desire to set right the wrong. So as we approach these people, we make it very clear that we are here to set right or wrong. We are here to discuss our harms. We are here to listen. We are here to be vulnerable and authentic and share with them some of these facts we've learned about ourselves. Some of the ugly stuff that we see today was blocking us from being of maximum service to God and the people about us. Acknowledging those things is so powerful. When you go to another human being and you talk to them about being driven by fear, never feeling good enough, and utilizing each relationship for control and superiority and domination, and how wrong you see, how objectionable you see that is in your life, and how that drove you to harm them. Remember, we're not justifying any of our behavior here either. We were wrong. Harming someone, there's no good in harming anybody. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries, right? Demonstration of goodwill, letting them know, what can I do to make this right? Moving forward from here, is there anything that I left out? Is there anything that you would like to discuss? If you're not ready to discuss it at this time, I am open to it whenever you are. You let me know. What am I doing there? I'm not only using discernment, but I'm also acknowledging that I'm not expecting you to heal the snap of a finger. And I'm acknowledging my willingness moving forward to change and to be open to you talking to me about how I've harmed you. A lot of people aren't ready to do that right away, especially family members. A lot of them want to sit back and watch you fail again so that you can prove to them that all of this recovery stuff is a bunch of horseshit and that God doesn't even exist anyway. So you need to go in expecting that. You go in with love. We're not here to judge. I'm not here to minimize the pain I caused you. I'm just here to acknowledge it and to let you know that there's a power working in my life that never has been working before. And I'm here to say things that I was never able to do on my own before. And here I am. I stand before you vulnerable, authentic, and truly, truly sorry. Right? A lot of the times they tell you don't use the word sorry. Well, again, this is up to you guys. If your heart's open and the word sorry comes out, then it comes out. It's okay. If it's coming from your spirit, it's fine. You just let these people know that this is authentic and that hurting them has hurt you, right? Remember, we validated our pain when we did our inventory in those first couple of columns, right? We got to recognize something before we let it go. So as we're going to make these amends to these people, we're validating their pain now. We're acknowledging the fact that I harmed you. Because ultimately, the goal, maybe they'll let it go. Maybe they won't. I don't know. But at least you're giving them the opportunity to. So it's a nice opportunity for them. and they'll get to know you a little bit better, which is always good. So we're not going to use this as an excuse to shy away from the subject of God. I suggest you share with them what's working in your life. We're not trying to push anything on them. When it will serve any good purpose, we're willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. Again, discernment. That's our word for the day. Maybe the month. It's a great word. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. Now remember, we saw some of that in our inventory. We're not here to dismiss what anybody did. We want to release it. We want to be free of it. We want to walk this world in this human experience lighter so that we can get closer to the spiritual being that we truly are. I just want to be lighter. And in my realization, in my inventory, I recognized, whoa, man, I'm not much better than this person that I've been hating on, right? So even if they have done us more harm, we're going to set that aside. Though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. That means we go for it, right? The rubber meets the road. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Confessing our former ill feeling. Now, we all have this perception. I'm going to go and I'm going to tell you how I harmed you here, 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 and here. Do you have anything else to talk about? Did I leave anything else out? What about telling them, confessing to them our former ill feeling about them? Where did we see that in our resentment inventory? It's scary. And it's difficult to do, but it is the most powerful and honest and vulnerable thing that one can do in the immense process. Hey, mom, I've been carrying around this resentment for years that you chose other men over me. You were married 4 times. I've used that to isolate and to punish you. To shut you out of my life. To treat you bad. To give you this idea that I'm superior and that I'm better than you. Our relationship has been affected adversely. And for that, I apologize. I've recognized through the power of God in my life that that's objectionable. I've seen the truth in it. And I've also seen that I'm no better than you. I've cheated on my wife. I've lied to my wife. I've gone to women for validation my entire life. I recognize that today. I'm here to let you know that I am no better than you, and I love you with all my heart. And for that, I apologize. Is there anything else you want to talk about? See, the power in that, as opposed to, mom, when I was 17 and I snuck out of the house and you cried all night, and you didn't know where I was, or when I was 15 and I ran away, or when I was 14 and I overdosed on drugs. Those are all valid things. But listen to the power of what I said prior. The vulnerability, the authenticity, the facts that I really learned about myself. So please contemplate that as you go do these amends. And if you've done them and you're contemplating doing them again, think about that. Because I didn't learn that until the last time I went through the work this way. And I had never done that. Ever. And it was much more real. And it opened them up to have a discussion with me. So we're going to confess our former ill feeling. And we're going to express our regret. Right? Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. Now, when you talk about your recovery, use caution. That statement can seem like I'm here for a selfish gain. I'm only here to make an amends to you because if I don't, I'm never going to overcome drinking, which is the truth. Maybe say that statement towards the end. Maybe say something like what I just spoke on my mom towards the end of the conversation, you know, as it let it grow. Say, yeah, well, you know, mom, if I didn't do this tonight, I probably wouldn't overcome this drinking and drugging that I've been doing. Maybe we end with something like that, just to let them know how important it really is. Leading with that might be dangerous, so contemplate that. We're there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do or she should do. His or her faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. See, now when I was letting my mom know about my former ill feelings, I wasn't discussing her faults. I was discussing my resentment and what I've been carrying around. That's my fault. And at the end of it, acknowledging that, hey, I'm no better than you, and this is what I learned about myself, and I love you. And it was wrong of me to carry that around and use those things as this driving force in my life. Basically, just to hold against you. So if our manner is calm, frank, and open, we're going to be gratified with the result. Guaranteed. I mean, there are some. Maybe you cheated on, or maybe you had an engagement with somebody's spouse or something, and you're going to, and the dude's going to spit in your face. Maybe he's going to punch you in the face. I don't know. This is fitting ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Remember, courage is not the absence of fear. We're going at this with courage. That does not mean we're not going to be afraid. But God is on the other side of that fire. And that's where we're going to see results. We're going to see results as we walk through this process. And we'll talk about those promises at the end of the night tonight. So in 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. That happens very often, by the way. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. It doesn't say never, it says rarely. Our former enemy sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they're going to offer assistance. It shouldn't matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office, just like I was talking about. We've made our demonstration, done our part, it's water over the dam. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal, we can let these people know that we're sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. So contemplate that. If you owe money, you got to pay it back. If you're scared to face them, we got to face them. I stole power from SDG&E for a very long time. And going through this process, I was convicted to go and talk to them. Now, we'll get down to another portion that's going to talk about not harming other people. I may have went to jail. I may have been blacklisted from ever being able to have an electric bill again. So we prayed on it. We meditated about it. I took it to my sponsor. We talked about it. ultimately came to the conclusion that I found somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous that was struggling, that I knew, and I paid their electric bill for a year. And that was my restitution. That was my financial amends to SDG&E. So some of these need careful contemplation. We're alcoholics and addicts, and we've done some really crazy stuff. Perhaps we've committed a criminal offense, which might land us in jail if we were to know the authorities. If it were known to the authorities, we may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. We have already admitted this in confidence to another person, but we are sure we would be imprisoned or lose our job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offense, such as padding the expense account. Most of us have done that sort of thing. Maybe we're divorced and have remarried, but haven't kept up the alimony to number one. She's indignant about it and has a warrant out for our arrest. That's a common form of trouble too. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. So that's what I was faced with that particular amends and reading that portion of the book. And my take on it was, well, you're going to have to be willing to face the music. So it is important to discuss with your mentor, your sponsor, other people in the program that have experience with this. Take it to prayer, take it to meditation. Use discernment, right? I was told that imprisonment, being a sole provider for my home and my family, may not be a good idea. So I had to carefully contemplate that, and that's how we came up. I didn't come to that conclusion. My sponsor did a meditation while we were having a meeting, and he suggested it. But whatever you do, don't shrink at anything. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. So we're not trying to needlessly sacrifice others to save ourselves. Gotta be careful. A man we know had remarried because of resentment and drinking. He had not paid alimony to his first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life, had secured a position, and was getting his head above water. It would have been impressive heroics if he had walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am." We thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary, but if we were in jail, he could provide nothing for either family. We suggested he write his first wife admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. He did, and also sent a small amount of money. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course, she did not, and the whole situation has long since been adjusted. So we've talked about going to your enemy. We've talked about creditors, owing money, criminal offenses, alimony. Before taking drastic action, we might implicate other people, which might implicate other people. We secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, ask God to help. And the drastic step is indicated we must not shrink. So there are some requirements. That's kind of using some discernment there. I obtained some permission. I consulted with others. I asked God for help, and I come up with an answer. So this brings to mind a story about one of our friends. While drinking, he accepted a sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival, giving him no receipt for it. He subsequently denied having received the money and used the incident as the basis for discrediting the man. He thus used his own wrongdoing as a means of destroying the reputation of another. In fact, his rival was ruined. He felt that he had done a wrong he could not possibly make right. If he opened that old affair, he was afraid it would destroy the reputation of his partner, disgrace his family, and take away his means of livelihood. What right had he to involve those dependent upon him? How could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? After consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. Fitting ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Hanging on to this stuff. Asking ourselves the question, am I fitting myself to be of maximum service to God? What does this new relationship with God, this access to power that I have acquired, look like? Or this access of power that I'm still struggling to gain look like if I don't do this? He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking again, and all would be lost anyhow. He attended church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. His action met widespread approval, and today he is one of the most trusted citizens of his town. This all happened years ago. See, we're going to be amazed by the results that we're going to get. But again, we're going in with no expectations. We can't really tell what the outcome's going to be. Just trusting in God. Let me shut this door. Okay, so now we're going to talk about cheating on your mate. If you read these pages carefully enough, you can find most of the answers to doing your amends process. Combined with looking a little bit deeper, listening to this recording, maybe listening to some other recording from workshop, consulting with your sponsor or step guide, you'll get through it. So the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with a woman in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. What does that mean? We're not bad people. We make mistakes, just like everybody else. The difference for us, we're willing to go out and right the wrong. Right? But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. So we did our sex inventory. We saw how we've been showing up in relationships and life. These character defects, the exact natures of our wrongs have been driving our attitudes and our relationships, our whole lives. Lifting those up to God to kind of change from here on out is our virtue and our goal. But it doesn't change the harm that we've done. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, or husband, They get resentful and they get uncommunicative. How could he or she be anything else? The husband or wife begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He or she commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he or she is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl or the guy who understands. In fairness, we must say that maybe she does. Maybe he does. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Oh man, that hits me hard. So I've been honest and vulnerable with you guys in this last almost 6 months now. So you know a lot about me. And like I said, if you read these pages carefully enough, you will find yourself. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She'll want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable expectations, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, see, that's very important. We have often found this the best course to take. So they're giving us some advice here. They're not laying down the law. Every circumstance and situation is different. Talk to your sponsor or step guide if you've got something like this going on. Get some advice. I lit a bomb off in my house. I blew up my wife's world. Things I wish I never would have said. For personal gain, out of fear, to try and push her away. There was zero benefit in it. Things she didn't know about. Doesn't mean you're not sorry, remorseful, and willing to change. So contemplate that. And if it's very, very heavy on your heart, talk to someone about it. Take it to prayer. Take it to meditation. I will not sit here and tell you that if it is so heavy on your heart and it keeps coming up in meditation and God is putting this message in your spirit to totally come clean, I wouldn't be the guy to tell you not to. All I can do is share consequences from me doing the same, but mine did not come from a place of love or honor or vulnerability or authenticity. Mine came from a place of just being mean in the midst of doing some horrible things just to make it worse. I can say that there's nothing she doesn't know today. That's kind of peaceful, but at what cost? My God. So we'll talk about that on the next couple pages and my consequences. So our design for living is not a one-way street. It's as good for the wife as it is for the husband. So this paragraph kind of makes me chuckle a little bit because I have had some real experience with this domestic issues. You can listen and see what you think about it. So it says it's as good for the wife as it is for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It's better, however, that one does not necessarily name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness and uppermost in mind. Keep it always in sight that we are dealing with the most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Totally agree with that. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk face-to-face combat. So it would be really nice for me to say, I've let it go. You need to let it go. It's best that we don't ever discuss it. You don't need to know details. Stop asking me. I've already come clean. That's not really me acknowledging her harm. See, it's a very, very difficult, touchy situation. I would hope none of you have to experience this, but maybe you do. I don't know. Maybe there's something heavy on your heart. Or maybe there's something in your relationship that's already, that darkness has already been brought to the light, but you just don't know how to repair it or talk about it. My experience is allowing her to hurt as long as she possibly needs to, and humbling myself, which I found very difficult, and listening when the time comes for her to talk about it. It's tough. But that's part of us allowing these people to heal on their own time, especially family members that we're doing this immense process with. We have to allow them to heal on their own time, which means that I mentioned earlier about opening ourselves up for a later discussion when they're ready. So now I've admitted to them, like, look, if you want to talk about something, I'm here. Well, that means I have to be willing to listen. Now, I don't know about any of you, but the hardest thing for me to do is when someone's telling me it's the wrong I've done. It's so much easier for me to put it on paper, talk about it to you guys, verbalize it to a sponsor, pray about it. But for some reason, when someone's telling me what I did wrong, oh man, that ego and pride wall comes up, that fear of not being good enough and failure takes over, and I just shut down. It's really hard. So it's going to take a lifetime for me. That's my experience with this particular portion of the immense process and how it works. There has been healing. There has been a lot of vulnerability and honesty. And I have acknowledged that my search for validation from other women in all different ways, shapes, and forms is inappropriate. It's not honoring my marriage. It's not expressing the presence of God in my marriage. It's not honoring my wife. And it goes against everything I'm trying to do by lifting up my character defects to the power of God. So I'm aware of that today. I'm also aware that I can do nothing about it except for focus on love and passion and fidelity and honesty. I can lean towards that. That's all I can do. If I keep telling myself I got to be free of lust and greed and lies and dishonesty and anger, it's a storm that just swirls because I don't see any traction. But if I'm focusing my ideas on, okay, how about some love and some compassion? How about shutting your mouth and just trying to listen? How about showing up? Right? All the things that you didn't used to do. So let's just focus on that. That is the essence of being willing to have God remove my defects of character. Acknowledging I can't do it. If I'm focusing on them, writing them down, it does me no good. So let's walk the other way. Remember, the third step was a turn, man. What are we doing? We're walking south, right? I've been walking north my whole life. I'm a turn. I'm going to walk south. Walking south means I'm going against everything opposite of all of these defects of character in my life, right? I read something really good. I read so much, man. I've read so many books, Alcoholics Anonymous and all this stuff, and I'm like a spiritual butterfly, and I'm lucky if I get grounded from time to time. You know, I'm just being honest about my journey. But I read something that said, what if the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous are not the 12 steps? What if the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous are the opposite of your character defects? And I said, whoa, like, wow, there's some virtues right there. Like, those are the principles were love, tolerance, kindness, patience, right? Compassion. All the things that are opposite of self, dishonesty, fear, self-centeredness, right? Anyway, something to contemplate. So if you have no such complication, awesome. God bless you. But there's still plenty you need to do at home. Okay. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly we must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he's yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents from whom years he has shockingly treated. This is one of my favorite lines in the book. I know I say that a lot, but man, I've studied this thing for years. I love this book. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with us alcoholics. Think about that for a minute. Passing all understanding is the patience that mothers and wives have had with us alcoholics. Dude, that's awesome. That's God working and showing up for me when I didn't even think he was around. Right? They're still here. Now, maybe that's not your experience. Maybe your spouse left a long time ago. I don't know. We all have different experiences. But there is somebody in your life that is still around or coming back that had some sort of understanding and patience with you and that loves you for who you are and is just waiting for you to come around. Had this not been so, so many of us would have no homes today and we'd probably be dead. Wow. This is power, man. This is what I mean by having a personal experience with this book. And again, this thing's going to end in a few weeks, guys. We're done. How often do you open this book up? How much do these words mean to you? Does this thing get cracked open on a daily basis? Are you going back through it? Every time you open this thing, you will have a new experience with it. If you are open to the power of God in your life, you will see yourself. You will see where you can grow. You'll see where you're falling short. You'll see where you've gained. You'll see results. You'll see the power of God. And at the end of this workshop, I'm going to lean real heavily on taking this thing and going to find somebody to work with, man. That's how you're really going to keep this thing open all the time, right? If I was just to come to this workshop on Thursday nights and open this book once a week and call that enough, I'd be a liar. I would not be worthy of sitting here teaching what I've learned, basically sharing what I've learned in this experience with other people, if I considered this my recovery. That would be ridiculous. So contemplate that. That's what this is about, right? How often do you open this book, man? I asked you in the beginning to read 84 through 88 every day. So if you've been following directions in this workshop, man, you've already opened this book, what, almost 175 times. Ah, there you go. Are you doing something? I don't know, man. Throwing it out there. It's on you. This is all up to you. You cannot transmit something you don't have. There's a chapter in here that we don't even go over, a vision for you. Okay. And at the end of this, I'm going to encourage you guys to read The Family Afterward in a Vision to You and have your wife read to the wives and have your boss read to the employers. You cannot transmit something you don't have. It's impossible. Remember that. You can't be telling someone to go make amends if you're sitting on some. So what are we like, man? We are like a tornado roaring our way through the lives of others. That's what we've done. That's a good expression, explanation, definition of my life. Hearts have been broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Wow. Think about that for a minute. There's a few things that you just want to remember. Not with guilt. Not with shame.
but maybe with a little bit of remorse and a little bit of regret.
I mean, I want to change who I am. Right? So we read something in that paragraph. This is another thing you guys are going to start to do as you study this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, this Bible, man, right, of recovery, this beautiful, this, I call it in my book, a literary marvel, just like the Bible. It is, it really is, right? So what's going to happen is you guys are going to start to connect some dots the more you study this thing. So I just read a paragraph, right? The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. I said, whoa. But not so for the alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilations of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentments, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. That's out of there as a solution. Huh. That's playing the tape back, dude. You guys hear that? Me play the tape back? Play that tape back. Who you really are when you pick up a drink or a drug. What your life was really like and how well you hid it from yourself and from everybody else. Some of us, everybody knew, man, we ended up in jail. We ended up in institutions. We ended up divorced. We lost our home. Some of us hid it pretty well. Either way, it's the same stuff. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, all my friends asked me, why? I said, hey, my brother's in recovery. They said, oh, thank God. Dude, he's no worse than me. I just hit it like that. When my door's open to the world, I put that Jekyll and Hyde, right? Boom, the mask comes on. Nobody knows the shit that goes on in my home. But when those doors closed, there was three people in my life, my two sons and my wife. And those two paragraphs describe it perfectly. Broken hearts, affections uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits that keep my home in turmoil. So, we feel that a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. You see, I'm abstinent now. I'm removed from the drugs and the drink. What about all the other stuff? Sobriety is not enough. That would be like me being the farmer who came out of the cyclone cellar to find my home gone. And I said to my wife, don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing, right? What's wrong with sleeping in the dirt? The wind ain't blowing. It's kind of like saying, I'm sober. It ain't that enough for you? Now shut up and leave me alone, right? We've all lived there. Part of the reason I came into recovery, I couldn't live like that anymore. So here's the thing with this amends process and domestic issues, okay? Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. Take that to heart. Understand that it is going to take work, that your actions are going to speak louder than your words. When it comes to family, we must express love, understanding, and compassion. We must walk south towards these new virtues in our life with no expectations. Hard to do. I want results. Doesn't work like that, right? Long period of reconstruction ahead. What does that look like? We must take the lead. We are taking the lead in this long period of reconstruction. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it based on our inventory. Because now I'm armed with facts about myself and I know some truth. And I'm willing to be vulnerable and admit that to you. And I got to be very careful not to criticize them. Even though their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that my own actions are partly responsible. So I clean house with the family. The best way to do that, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, kindliness, tolerance, and love. There's a 9-step prayer, guys. Page 83. Favorite prayer in the whole book. Get on your knees and ask God, please show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Why do I ask him to show me the way? Why don't I say, God, please give me patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love? Because I'm turned, man. I'm walking south. You can give that to me all you want. I'm not going to utilize it. I need you, God, to show me the way of it every day, all the time. And the only way I'm going to allow him to show me the way is to ask. I got to ask him. I got to let God show up for me. I got to let God do God's stuff in my life by saying, please, God, show me the way. Patience. People say, don't, careful playing for patience because you're going to get a circumstance in your life. And dude, come on. Stop it. How bad do you want these virtues? Are you willing to go to any length? Are you willing to utilize the power of God to overcome a circumstance in your life that requires patience? It's not a test, man. God ain't testing us. He loves us. He wants us just to walk back to what we were designed to be, to what our purpose is, to be of maximum service to him and the people about us. I can't do that without patience, kindliness, tolerance, and love. It's impossible, right? Think about it. Think about how long you lived your life without that. Utilize it with your children. Utilize it with your spouses. Utilize it with your friends, your employers, your employees, the fellowship of AA. How do I do that? Well, I'm going to ask every day. That's where I'm going to start. Okay? I'm not going to have expectations. Next week, we'll talk about what we do when we recognize that we might be falling short a little bit. Okay? It's all good, man. There's no condemnation here. If you're working a program of action, we're not here to beat you up and tell you you're falling short. You're going to do that on your own. You're either going to be okay with not doing it, or you're going to be so not okay with not doing it that you're forced to do it, or you're going to be willing to go to any length to do it, and you're going to overcome this with courage, and you're going to go to God with prayer, and you're going to allow him to help you. And then you're going to open your eyes on the other side and say, wow, those promises are kind of real, man. That stuff's like real. Then when you sit down with someone, take them through the work, you'd be like, hey, check this out, man. This is what happened in my life, right? So all that I just said, this is what it says. Spiritual life is not a theory. We're not talking about theories here. This is in italics. We have to live it. We have to live it. What does that mean? What does it look like for you to live a spiritual life? Do you believe that you have to live a spiritual life in order to recover? Do you believe you're powerless enough that you need a new power in your life? Do you believe your life's unmanageable enough that you need a new manager at all times? Because if you're not increasing your spiritual life, if you're not maintaining it, if you don't believe that I have to live it, it might be a first step problem. Everyone says, oh, it's a third step problem. I can't get this connection with God. So scary. No, man. It's because you don't believe that you're powerless. Maybe for some reason you believe you still got a little bit of control. Right? So unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. Remember, spiritual life is not a theory for us. We have to live it. We, not them. Difficult. So we're not going to talk incessantly to them about spiritual manners. They're going to change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. right? The damage we've done. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scrappy. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. There's an amends in my life I can't go make. Okay. This mistress I had, right? In 2012, right? Manipulated, used and abused, man, right? Drugged that woman through the mud, along with my family. It was so ugly. Remember, we're not, what does our ninth step say, right? We make direct amends to such people as long as doing so, whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. You're going to need to really consider that. So me going to make, I was aware of it. I recognized it. It was heavy on my heart. I wanted to do it. What did I do? Talk to my wife about it. How do you feel, honey? This is heavy on my heart. You know the program I'm working. I need to make amends to this particular person. Hell no, she said. Ain't no way you're doing that. Ain't no way in hell. You take your shit with you. Okay, got it. What'd I do? Wrote a little letter, took it to God, talked about it, tore it up, threw it away, right? Because putting something in the mail wasn't an option either. I mean, I would have to find an address. There's just something you can't do. If you're willing, that's what's key here. Go to God with it. Talk to your sponsor about it. Open up to somebody. They should already know the circumstances behind it anyway, in your inventory and your sex inventory. So they'll probably back it up with, yeah, Jason, you might want to talk to your wife about that one. So, like I said, find your experience in these pages, okay, guys, girls, like find it. It's the key. This stuff isn't going to work for me if I don't believe it, if I don't practice it, and if I don't have an experience with it. It's not going to work. So this is what happens if we are painstaking about this phase in our development. Right? This phase, this particular phase, the amends process. If we are painstaking about this, this is what happens. I believe it. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Okay? We're not going to regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Man, I carried around so much resentment. Regret, shame for the things I've done. I don't today. I forgive myself. Part of that was coming clean. We comprehend the word serenity and we're going to know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So I suggest not to take that paragraph literally, to recognize the experiences you have had, the ones that are happening, the ones that you need to take a little more action to experience, then it's a little more realistic. I hear people say all the time in meetings, man, the promises have come true in my life. And I'm like, man, have you read those things like carefully? Like you're telling me all of that is, I don't know, man. Self-seeking slips away. Yeah, slowly, right? My whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. It has. Fear of people and economic security will leave us slowly, comes back some days. I'm going to intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. Yes. I'm going to suddenly realize God's doing for me what I can't do for myself. Absolutely. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. One day at a time, losing interest in selfish things, more leaning towards gaining interest in my fellows. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I think the uselessness feeling has disappeared for me. Self-pity rears its ugly head. Sure. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see that our experience can benefit others. Absolutely. Man, I shared with you guys some ugly stuff in the last few months. You're going to know the word, comprehend the word serenity and know peace every morning when I'm done meditating for 20 minutes. Yep. For sure. That's probably the best time for me. Then circumstances kind of take over sometimes. Life happens. Not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. Hell yeah. When I first came and heard that line in Alcoholics, I'll never forget. And they called on me to share. I said, I don't regret it. I want to shut the door. I want to slam the door on that shit. I don't ever want to talk about that again. I want it to go away. Not today. I want to share it with you guys to let you know how I've overcome my domestic problem. We'll talk about that in working with others, how we share that with the people we're working with to let them know that anything is possible with the power of God. Anything. God will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. Anything can be overcome. You're going to be amazed before you're halfway through. Halfway through what? The immense process. You're going to be amazed. Get out there and do it. This is, that's what it is, man. You got to hear that? Go knock on the door. That's what you do. That's how we do this, man. Right now. Do not hesitate. Make the cards. Do the amends. Okay? Remember, I'm going to go away. I mean, we'll still be in contact. You guys so desire. All of you that hang around through this workshop all the way through will permanently be in my phone. I hope that we permanently engage in conversation. And I'm going to ask you guys to probably help me in a workshop later on next year or later on this year, whatever, right? But ultimately, nobody's going to be around to hold you accountable. No one's going to say, hey, Tim, hey, David, hey, Alisol, hey, Ashley, hey, Kim. Lindsay, Helen, Kyle, Kim, did you go do your amends? No one's going to do that to you. So just remember that. No one's going to say, hey, what's your 6 and 7 looking like, man? No one's going to say, hey, are you reading 84 through 88? Your sponsor might, when you call them, say, hey, man, I'm going nuts here. The question might be, when's the last time you meditated? I don't know. You know, but that's about as far as it's going to go. So please remember, this is up to you guys. This is your action. What you're going to put into this is what you're going to get out of it and what you're going to be able to carry to somebody else. If there's places you're balking, things you don't need to do or think you don't, man, you better think again. Think again. Say, hey, no, I need to do this. Why? Because I really want to help somebody. That's why. I want to be able to open up and engage with somebody who's suffering. To continue to help myself, right? So that's our steps 8 and 9. And I love you guys so much. I'm going to stop the recording and then I'll give you your homework.